Chapter 7. "But where?" Hans said. Kira knew exactly where they should go, but it was hard to form the words. She'd kept the secret for so long.
"Kira," Hans said. "You look like a hungry needle gawp, opening and closing your mouth like that."
"I have a place," she blurted. "A safe house. I've been maintaining it for 2 years. It has supplies, a little bit of money. No one knows about it. If we can just get there, we'll be safe for a while."
"I was right," Hans said. "I knew you had a secret."
Sulo said something, but Kira only caught the word for distance. She could understand a few words of Hatti's, but she wasn't about to let anyone know.
"He wants to know how far," Hans said.
"It's all the way across town, in the Bossoms." Hans' eyebrows went up.
"Why would you keep a safe house there? That district is even worse than..."
"I have my reasons, all right?" Kira's heart was racing, and only partly because the White Worm's scrum rats were on their way. She hated revealing the safe house to anyone. It was so much a part of her.
"We can't get all the way to the Bottoms underground," Hans said. "The sewers empty into a couple of those deep water canals. It would put us right out in the open."
Saulo chirped something.
"Yeah, of course it's faster to use the bridges, but who has money for a speeder cab?" Han responded. "Not me."
"We could steal money," Kira said. Saulo jumped to his feet, even as he removed the cube and powered down his data pad. The blueprint disappeared, leaving the cave feeling gloomy and cold. He stashed everything in his pack, chattering all the while.
"Saulo has an idea," Han said. "He knows where we can get access to a speeder. He says it's just outside the financial district, and we can be there before the sun goes down."
That was all Kira needed to hear to get started. "Eat your dog biscuits now, because the route to the financial district will require us to swim. You both know how to swim, right?" They nodded at her.
"We'll have to keep that data cube out of the water," Han pointed out.
Saulo said something angrily.
"I don't know how to keep it dry. Hold it in your mouth or something. Rhodians have dry mouths, right? Drier than humans, anyway."
"We'll figure it out when we get there," Kira said. "Now let's go." She hated how necessity forced them to head out into danger without a solid plan. Her mind poked at possibilities, potential routes, contingencies, as they packed up their few items and moved toward the crack and the low tunnel beyond.
"Friends, no,"
Paolo said. Kira paused and looked at Han, who simply seemed confused.
"What?"
he asked.
"Friends, stay."
"Look," Han said. "It's been great hanging out, and we really appreciate it, but we have to go before the White Worms find us."
Paolo scowled, and Kira's heart started racing. Suddenly, he looked a lot less like friend Paolo, and more like the scary old man Paolo she'd been worried about all along. "Maybe he wants more food," she whispered urgently. "Do we have any more biscuits?" Saulo fumbled with his bag, and Han impatiently reached in to grab one. He leaned forward, offered it to Paolo.
"Here you go," he said. "Is this what you want?"
Paolo's eyes narrowed, and his hand bolted out to grab the hard lump of fish bread. Kira relaxed. The withered old creature screamed mournfully, flinging the biscuit at the wall, where it exploded in a shower of crumbs.
"Friends, stay!"
"Friends, go!"
shouted Han, shoving Kira and Saulo through the crack. He backed out after them, fending off Paolo's clutching hands, while Paolo whimpered like an injured puppy.
"Which way do we go?" Kira asked.
"That way,"
Han said, pointing down a low tunnel, opposite the way they had entered.
"Run!"
Kira pushed Saulo ahead of her and started running. He babbled something she couldn't understand, but she pressed a hand into his back and willed him to run harder. Han caught up with her just as the tunnel twisted.
"Where are we going?" she shouted at him. "I have no idea. I just know that Rebold and his hounds are in the other direction."
Paolo's wail of sadness chased them down the tunnel. If they hadn't been running for their lives, Kira would have stopped and strangled Han that instant.
He didn't have any kind of plan at all. Just a vague set of instincts that might be a gut reaction, or might just be gas caused by eating dog biscuits. "That way!" he shouted to Saulo, who turned down the side tunnel Han was pointing to. Kira still had no idea where they were going, but the ceiling was a little higher, giving them more room to run. Suddenly, the tunnel sloped downward. Saulo's feet slipped out from under him, and he splashed onto his backside and disappeared down a dark chute. Kira stopped just in time at the very brink, and then Han bumped into her. They lost their footing in the slime, tumbled into the muck, and went careening down. She braced herself for a hard impact into a grate or wall, but she shot out of the hole and dropped onto a giant bed of glowing fungus. Kira rolled out of the way just in time to avoid Han landing on her. Kira scrambled to her feet, furious.
"You idiot! You had no idea where we were going. You could have gotten us trapped or killed."
Saulo said something she couldn't understand, but Han said,
"I know."
Han's admission took some of the fire out of her. Wait, was he admitting he'd been wrong?
"You know what?"
she asked suspiciously. He stood up and paused to wipe some of the sticky fungus off his elbows and out of his hair. Then he looked at her with a grin.
"I know exactly where we are. And you do, too."
She turned and really looked at the room. Knee-deep, stagnant water, a variety of entrance shafts high on the wall. One main tunnel entering into the chamber, and a large circular drainage hole at the far end of the room. The sound of water trickling into the room and water dripping out. It was all very familiar. Lady Proxima called it the Cistern of Discipline. Worms were sent here after storms to scavenge for flotsam. Sometimes they dropped nets down through the drainage hole to catch fleek eels and copper grins. More often, though, white worms were sent here as punishment for not meeting Lady Proxima's quotas or missing curfew too many times. The scrum rats would be tossed through the drainage hole into the giant underground basin below. If they could swim to the edge and find their way back, their transgressions were forgiven. Kira had made it back, but not everyone did. The littlest ones struggled especially.
"This is the entrance to the Cistern of Discipline," she said.
"This is the entrance to the Cistern of Discipline," Han said enthusiastically.
"So if we go down the hole, we can swim to the drainage tubes and make our way down toward the bottoms."
"Right,"
Han said, jerking a thumb the other direction.
"Or we can sneak back through the other tunnel toward the white worm den and..."
"Han..."
Saulo interrupted.
"Not now," Han said impatiently. "I'm trying to explain my plan."
Kira heard and then saw the same thing Saulo did. She whispered urgently,
"Han, don't move."
"What?"
he snapped, spinning around.
"Just because..."
The words died on his lips. Standing at the entrance to the tunnel were three of Rebolt's hounds. Their large, bone-white bodies were machines of glistening muscle. The sharp wedges of their heads ended in ferocious jaws that could tear a man in half, framed by tentacle-like growths. Where the hounds were, Rebolt would not be far behind. The lead hound sniffed the air and growled. The other two spread out to flank Kira, Saulo, and Han.
"Get behind me,"
Han whispered, putting himself between Kira and the hounds.
"All the better for me to escape," she whispered,
and started edging back toward the drainage hole. Han followed her, step by step. Saulo, on the other hand, walked right toward the hounds. He was going to sacrifice himself to give them a chance to escape, which was a terrible plan. He had the data cube, and they needed it if they were going to have any chance of survival.
"Don't do it, Saulo," she pleaded.
His one good antenna quirked in puzzlement, and then he reached into his bag. Maybe he was going to throw her the cube, and pulled out the rest of the dog biscuits. The hounds closed on him like they were seeing an old friend. He gave one biscuit to each and patted their sides while they rubbed their tentacled snouts against his face.
Rebolt's voice echoed down the tunnel, shouting for his hounds. The largest hound swiveled his head toward the voice, and then back toward Saulo, growling again. "We need to go," she said, and she turned and ran for the drain. There was nothing to do but jump. She folded her arms tight to her chest, closed her eyes, and leaped. The drop felt like it lasted forever, although it couldn't have been more than 9 or 10 meters. She hit the water with a hard splash. Cold darkness closed in over her head. It was too easy to get disoriented in dark water, but she knew a trick. She calmed herself and allowed her body to sink until her boots met sludge. Then she kicked off the bottom and shot to the surface. As she treaded water and gasped for air, a second and third splash landed nearby. Han's head popped up first, and he shook it like a wet dog, scattering water everywhere. Saulo popped up a moment later, and she could see the light glinting in his huge black eyes. "The data cube," she said. "We can't get it wet." Saulo opened his mouth and showed her the data cube on his tongue. Han nodded enthusiastically.
"Good thinking."
She was set to argue that a mouth wasn't much drier than a cistern, but the hounds stood at the edge of the drain above them and started howling. They had only seconds until Rebolt showed up, and if he didn't have a blaster, the white worms who followed him would. As one, they started swimming toward the far end of the reclamation basin and the overflow tubes. She dreaded the sound of a splash behind them, but no one followed. And moments later, they had climbed, breathless and dripping wet, onto a ledge at the end of the basin. Rebolt's voice echoed through the massive underground chamber.
"Come back! It will be worse for you if you don't!"
Kira was forming a suitably sharp response, but looking back at the water, she saw ripples from a school of fish, or something larger, cutting toward them. The white worm scum rats weren't the only ones who visited this cistern to find something to eat.
"Let's go!"
she cried, pushing Han and Saulo up the metal rungs of a ladder to the nearest overflow tube. Seconds later, she clambered in behind them. It was pitch black.
"We can't walk down this tube blind," she said. "We could fall down a shaft, miss our turn. Saulo, maybe you can use your datapad to light our way."
Saulo mumbled something in reply, but she couldn't understand him.
"He says we have to wait for the datapad to dry out before turning it back on,"
Han translated. "Can't he take the cube out of his mouth now?" She looked down at her own soaked clothes and wet hands. "Never mind. There's no place drier to put it." Saulo mumbled something again, but with the data cube in his mouth, even her basic Hatties failed her.
"No, I'm not trusting some old superstition," Han said. "And Kira isn't either."
Saulo blurted out a longer phrase, and Han calmed down.
"Oh, that works," he said.
Then to Kira he explained,
"He says not to worry. He can see really well in the dark."
"That's great," she said. "Why don't you lead the way, Saulo?" He said something else she couldn't understand. She waited for Han to translate, and then, after a moment, realized she was standing there alone. The only sound was her own breathing. They'd left without her. "I will not panic. I am not a panicker." With one hand on the wall, she began feeling her way down the black tunnel, hurrying until she stumbled right into someone.
"Han! Saulo!"
"We're right here," whispered Han. "Maybe you should hold on to my sleeve, and I'll hold on to Saulo's, so we don't get separated."
Saulo mumbled something.
Han said, "Yeah, I'm cold too. Stop complaining."
Kira was beginning to shiver. Her stomach growled, and she regretted that Saulo had given the last of the biscuits to Rebolt's hounds. She'd been running and hiding all day, and was hungry and exhausted. But they couldn't stop yet. "Now let's move." Hours later, feeling even hungrier and more exhausted, Saulo led them up out of the tunnels and into a basement beneath an old warehouse. They reached a rusty, arched gate that was their last remaining barrier to escape. Light drifted down from a gutter in the street above,
but not much. Night was falling. They'd been running and hiding all day. The gate was old, and it seemed to barely hang on its hinges, but the latch was controlled by a modern access pad. Kira had never been here before. It was one of the few areas Lady Proxima did not have entree to. She sized up the gate. Maybe with the right amount of force applied just so, they could pop it off its hinges. She was just about to suggest as much when Han stepped forward and pressed his thumb to the reader. Something clicked. The gate swung open. Kira and Saulo stared at him.
"Hey, get around, okay?" he said.
Saulo bleeped something. He had taken the data cube out of his mouth and was holding it in his fist. She caught the word for people.
"Yeah, I know some people here too," Han said. "If you told me the speeder you had access to was at this garage, I could have gotten us here quicker. I know a shortcut."
Saulo chattered back angrily, something about trust and fodder, as the three of them stepped through the gate, closed it behind them, and found themselves confronted by a ladder. A rung was missing about two-thirds of the way up, but Kira decided it looked sound enough. Han climbed up first and disappeared through a hatch, then Saulo, and finally Kira. When her head crested the floor, her nose was assaulted by the scents of wet duracrete, overheated grease, and exhaust fumes. She climbed up onto the floor and sprung to her feet, ready for anything. Blasters, Corsec, angry droids. She needn't have worried. They were in an old warehouse, with high ceilings and pollution-fogged clear-story windows. Speeders were everywhere, every variety and color, in every possible state of repair. Beings and maintenance droids scurried all over the place, getting ready for something. A few attended the speeders themselves, checking gauges, tightening sockets, siphoning fuel from nearby tanks. Two humans and one droid greeted Han. He'd obviously been here before. No one else paid them any mind. Kira felt her breathing ease. All of a sudden, Saulo swore loudly.
Togawa.
Kira jumped before she realized that he was angry, not frightened. She was going to have to get him to teach her a few choice Huttese swear words. He obviously knew several. He and Han talked back and forth a bit. Kira gathered that their arrival was terribly timed. A race was about to start, and the speeder Saulo had access to was no doubt lined up and ready to go.
"Which speeder?" Han asked. "I know a lot of people who rent space in this garage."
"Kalopa,"
Saulo told him.
"You're kidding me," Han said. "Rizo is your brother?"
Saulo made a sad sound.
"Yeah, don't get me started about family," Han said with a knowing sigh.
"It's your brother's speeder we're looking for?" Kira asked. Saulo nodded.
"Then why don't you just ask him to borrow it?" she suggested.
"He wouldn't mind sitting out one race, right?"
Saulo
protested vehemently.
"He and his brother don't talk," Han said. "Or maybe Saulo doesn't talk to Rizo. They haven't said a word to each other in 6 months. Anyway, he says there's absolutely no way Rizo would skip a race. Racing is everything to him."
Kira didn't know much about racing, only that there was the legal kind and the illegal kind. And the kind that happened in this part of the city, with these color-drenched, souped-up speeders, was definitely the illegal kind. It was such a part of the local culture, though, that Corsec mostly looked the other way. Sometimes a fatal accident would occur, or property owned by an important citizen would get damaged, and Corsec would make a show of busting someone and decrying the practice of illegal street racing. But after a little time had passed, and the good people of Coronet had forgotten to be shocked and angry, everything would go back to normal. "Maybe someone else has a speeder we could borrow," Kira suggested. Han and Saulo gaped at her.
"What? What did I say wrong?" "You don't just ask to borrow someone's speeder," Han said.
Saulo nodded vigorously.
"It's like asking to borrow someone's spouse, or their soul."
"That makes no sense." Han looked down at the ground.
"It does to some of us."
"You have a better idea?"
"Well, no."
A maintenance droid flew by, startling them all, but it paid them no mind.
I mean, yes, Han said.
He looked up at her, his face shining with that abominable grin.
Uh-oh, said Kira.
Han grabbed Kira and Saulo by the shoulders and brought them close so the three of them were head-to-head. He whispered,
We grab Rezo. Tie him up. Take his place in the race.
Kira blinked. That might be the worst idea I've ever...
Hear me out. The race route takes us right down Naro Sinar Boulevard, across all the downtown bridges. When we're near the bottoms, we'll veer off the track. No one will question what happened. They'll just assume we blew a valve or something.
A few speeders rumbled past, cruising out toward the street. One belched dirty gray smoke. Another whined, high-pitched and metallic, like a rusty nail scraping a mirror. The race was starting soon. Whatever they decided, they had to do it quickly.
All right. Maybe that's not the worst plan, Kira admitted.
Saulo, what do you think? Saulo jabbered something while bobbing his head up and down. Han gave him a weird look, but he translated,
He loves the idea of tying up his brother. Apparently they really don't get along.
Okay, let's do it, Kira said. Saulo, lead the way. Saulo set off toward the far corner of the garage, and the others followed.
How are we going to do this? Han whispered.
Rezo hasn't seen his brother in a long time, right? Kira said. I figure he'll be really surprised. While he's distracted, you sneak up behind him.
And do what?
I don't know. Hit him over the head with a wrench or something.
Kira, I don't want to hurt anyone.
Better him than us. Saulo froze in his tracks. He turned and whispered something.
That's Rezo, Han said, pointing.
Another young Rodian crouched beside a speeder. His skin had a slightly yellower cast than Saulo's, and he seemed a couple of years older. A pair of massive goggles hung from his neck, sized for Rodian eyes. But it was the speeder Rezo was tinkering with that took Kira by surprise. It was huge and unwieldy, as green and shiny as an emerald, and it hovered closer to the ground than all the other speeders. Kira couldn't tell if the repulsor lift was broken, or if it was meant to be that way. Fluorescent green light rimmed the lower edge, making the oil-slicked cement beneath glow like a rotting swamp. Two stems, each ending in a disc, protruded from the hood. It took Kira a moment to realize the twin receivers were colored and contoured to look like Rodian antennae.
Holy moons! That thing looks like a giant green bug! Kira whispered.
I was thinking hoverbrick, said Han. It gets worse, though.
What do you mean? Rezo was oblivious to their presence. He leaned over the seat and hit a switch on the console. Holographic flames shot out from the fender and rear spoiler, dancing bluish and hazy in the air. Kira imagined that while the speeder was racing, the flames would appear to stream behind.
That's what I mean, Han said. Also, he removed the dampener from the engine coil, so it would be as loud as possible.
Sure enough, Rezo fired it up, and the whole warehouse rumbled so loudly, Kira felt it deep in her chest. She stretched on her tiptoes and leaned toward Han's ear, so he could hear over the noise.
We should make our move now! That horrible sound will cover any scuffle!
Han nodded, but then paused.
Are we sure we want to do this?
He asked them both. Saulo twittered something in a tease that even Kira could tell was an enthusiastic affirmative.
No, I don't have a better idea, Han said glumly.
With Saulo leading the way, the three of them crept forward.